points.
You might be smarter than us, but we're definitely smarter than these amateurs.
Is this going to be the intro to the show?
Yeah, basically what we do with our podcast is every episode, if we have a guest, okay. It always just starts off with them saying something like, wow, this is the most amateur interview I've ever done, or this is something with the word amateur in it usually.
Amateur.
And then we get into it, I'm just like, I have blah, blah, blah here, and we're going to talk about blah, 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 and then we start talking.
Am I just saying you're smarter than us? Sorry, am I... Well, I don't know why I'm spacing.
You want me to write you a script?
Yes, yes. Just write me down the words on the sandwich.
That's right, also, we need cute guys.
Amanda, I am so sorry. You're already sleeping.
She's drunk. She's not drunk. Yeah,
hey, it's okay. Beer was flowing very good at the memorial.
My bad, guys. I just looked at it. It is almost 11. It's 11:20.
Mark's like, get out of my house.
You fans may be smarter than us, but we're definitely smarter than these assholes.
Amateurs.
I wrote it down!
I don't know if you can bleep it.
You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Guys, welcome back to You're Smarter Than Us. We've got a whole crew with us today because it is a crossover pod. Guys, I've got with me Pat. Pat, yep. Say hello to the folks.
What's up, everybody?
And guys, I've also got the soccer goose with me, Ben.
Hello, Asheville people.
And Chris Davis.
How's it going, everybody?
Guys, we're recording this immediately after the 1-0 Greenville FC win over Asheville City. Guys, impressions?
Ugly. It was an ugly, ugly game. Greenville deserved to win. I mean, Asheville blew their chances. I'll let Chris and Ben talk a little bit more about their team, but on the Asheville standpoint, we had probably 2-3 clear-cut chances to put shots on target to create an opportunity. We did not capitalize on anything today. It was a little bit of a struggle for us as Asheville fans.
Yeah, it was definitely tricky. I was like, Ben and I didn't realize until we were about to come up here that we were going to be more or less on different sides of this because he's so hardcore Greenville FC.
A little bit.
I mean, I feel like at times he's wanted to turn our podcast, Amateur Hour, into a Greenville podcast, even though the great Chris Ashley already has a great one. So I figured, you know, I'll hang out with Asheville guys. So the main stuff I saw was, it seems like Asheville shouldn't cross. Or if they do, they need to try to figure out better placement for it. Because every time they cross, you just kind of got a feeling of, it's not going to work. Like, just as soon as it hit. And, you know, it was definitely frustrating. From what I can tell, Greenville did deserve that win. I did miss the goal, though, because I had to go to the little boys' room. So I'm interested to hear how that happened.
Yeah, I thought it was... Like you said, it was an ugly game. Can't tell you much of what happened in the first half, to be honest with you.
Were you drunk?
No, it was not. 45 minutes happened. That's all I know. Plus average time, as soccer goes. But I don't know. It was, like you said, Asheville had more threatening opportunities, but I kind of felt like Greenville had more opportunities. They weren't in front of the net, it felt like they were more threatening throughout the game. They had more of a counter. I guess you could say Greenville deserved to win. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the
game, it almost felt like the game was going to end in a draw.
Yeah, it really did.
The longer the game went, I was like, I'm okay with a 0-0 outcome in this game.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, that's really easy to say, I suppose.
Well, it's easy to say that, too, because when you look at when you guys actually scored the goal, it's totally against the run of play as well. Yeah. Like, Asheville, we had just created two different opportunities right there and missed. And we kind of had a defensive blunder, which led to the throw-in, which led to the goal for Greenville. I mean, I think we all kind of expected there towards the end, if anyone who was there at the game knew it was extremely chippy, and you just kind of figured there was going to be one more goal either on a counter from Greenville, I figured, or maybe even Asheville nicking one back. I was a little surprised it ended 1-0 instead of a 1-1 or a 2-0 with how things were going at the end.
Yeah, the end of the game, guys, for anybody who missed it, there was a ball that went out of the back line. The keeper caught it. It should have been a corner. Jamie Smith, number four, a center back for Asheville, came up, tried to retrieve the ball from the keeper, which led to a pushing match, which led to a determined goal kick, which Jamie protested. So there's 6 minutes of added time, and that probably chewed up 2.5 minutes of it, and it got so chippy at the end that the ref just blew the whistle. So the first Carolina Classico leg goes to Greenville 1-0. Guys, Ben, Chris, what was your experience? I know this isn't either one of your first Asheville game, but what was it like kind of taking part in this first leg of this rivalry?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, I always love coming up here, and it was definitely interesting with the Carolina Classico spin, because there seemed to be a little bit of discrepancy on what the total score is with the supporters thing, because I've heard different things. I heard that the soccer pool and the cornhole was each half a point, and then I've also heard that the two combined were half a point, so I don't know which way it was, but from what I heard, Greenville won both of those games, although... Yes. Benjamin and I did square off.
Hey, we're going to talk about it.
Oh, we're definitely talking about it.
There was other.
We're going to talk about this on this podcast. We're going to talk about Amateur Hour. I'm a guest star on Talking Jacks and talking about there too. It was glorious. We played soccer pool. It was Ben and Casey, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't know the Asheville fan that I was playing with. I don't know her name. She was nice.
I'm not sure.
She was really great. I'm pretty sure she scored most for us. But it was a lot of fun. We were right behind them, but they looked like they were going to get the win. And then him and Casey did really complicated geometry for about 3 minutes to try to figure out how to kick the eight ball in without scratching. Then Ben proceeds to kick, hits the eight ball, but instead only the cue ball goes in, and then, of course, we won. So I helped South Slope South.
Is this the equivalent of an own goal?
It was hilarious. The best part was how long y'all took to plan out a very, very, very simple shot for you just to mess it up. So if y'all want to see a picture of a sad goose, go check out our Twitter. I took a photo right after the victory. But it was really fun. I mean, I was really hopeful for this rivalry to be a little more on the friendly side, like a Charleston Battery versus Charlotte Independence, as opposed to a Charlotte Independence versus NCFC.
Please no.
USL fans will know what I'm talking about. But it definitely seems like that. And even at the beginning of the game, I remember you remarked, Tim, that it wasn't very chippy at the beginning. And I would say almost through the first half, it didn't seem very chippy. It seemed like one of the more friendlier games that you saw as an Asheville fan. But then it just progressively got worse. It was like the whole idea of this ending in a 0-0 draw and Asheville not scoring despite all the opportunities they had, all the crosses that went way all over the place. The one really good opportunity Asheville had where, I forget his name, number 40.
Morkow.
Yeah, he was, in my opinion, the most impressive player. He was just so fast. He was getting past guys. But
Andrade. Yeah.
He would put in a cross that didn't work, but the one time he didn't, instead he made a ground pass. It looked like from our angle, and we were really, really, really close. That was a wide open shot, yeah. But just... the pressure got to him, and then after that, it just kind of exploded, and it just seemed to get more and more bad until the very end of the game, where the ref just stopped it.
Yeah. Do you guys think that the little bit of frustration that played into the chippiness? Do you think there's Ben, you can speak to this maybe because you're a Greenville fan, yeah. But in terms of Asheville's kind of fighting for a top three or four position, Greenville's just kind of fighting to get into the playoff, and both needed these points. Mm. Did you see something maybe on the pitch that was that neither team really could afford a draw, because a win on either side kind of would set them up with three games left going into the playoffs?
I don't know. It was interesting. It honestly felt like Greenville was playing maybe more defensive in a way. They're normally very high in attacking. That's the way Lee Squires wants to play. It almost felt like they were more reserved in the first half. They could have been okay with a draw, could have been my perspective that I'm seeing that from. But I don't know, it was also different because when Malcolm Frago came out, I want to say in the first half, it was number 7 on the Greenville team. When he came out, I think it changed a lot of things. It made us play a lot more direct. We gave the ball to, can't remember his name. It was number 18. He was the pretty tall striker we had. I almost want to say we changed our formation as well, but we played a lot of things through him, who we ended up scoring the goal with as well. I think that changed our style of play a lot as well, because Greenville tends to play kind of spread out, and we pass the ball a lot, and it almost feels like we don't have somebody to finish the ball, which not to steal anything from Chris Ashley and his potential podcast, but he was sharing with me that Greenville needed somebody to put the ball in the back of the net, and that's what we had with number 18 that I'm forgetting his name. But I think he added a spark that we didn't really have. Malcolm Frigo was great. There's no doubt about it. I want him to be healthy. If we get Frigo and him on the field, it'll be fantastic. But yeah, I think that changed a lot of the things and really made us go for the win opposed to the draw potentially. Yeah.
Pat, can you tell everybody how much we missed Cameron Saul?
I was just thinking that right now. I was like, who's our creative spark? And Andrade out there on the right-hand side, number 40, I mean, Chris alluded to it earlier. He was probably our only standout performer of the game, beating men on the touchline. But, yeah, Cameron Saul, I mean, he's our talisman, it seems like, this year, coming out of the midfield. I mean, we're putting in balls into the middle, good cross. Not even good crosses, just crosses, and we're not connecting. And the one time, again, like Chris said, that we put it on the ground, we had an opportunity. But, man, Cameron Saul, I mean, you talk about dynamicism in the midfield, carrying the ball, long shots, creating opportunities for others. It really shows how reliant we are on him in a game like today where we needed just that one player to step up and create that moment for us.
Yeah, I saw Tom Dealey warming up. I'm a little surprised he didn't come in around about that 75th, 80th minute. We definitely could have used just fresh legs on the pitch. I think we only made two substitutions, one at half and then maybe one at the 65th, 70th minute. We definitely needed a creative spark towards the end of that game. But the first leg of the Carolina Classico goes to Greenville, 1-0. We'll see him back on July 4th. Ben and Chris, can you kind of tell us a little bit about what the environment was like? I know you guys have both been to Asheville games, but you regularly attend Charlotte Independence games. And a little bit of what it's like comparing that next step up in quality on the pitch, but the environment of the game from what you see in Charlotte on a regular basis compared to what you saw tonight.
I think that's a really good question and something that I feel Chris may also agree with this too, but I feel like Asheville's different in the sense that they're a smaller, close-knit community of soccer fans, but I don't want to say that they're the most connected fan base to the game, but it literally feels like everyone in the stands is attentively watching the game.
Yeah.
And not that it isn't in other games I've been to, but it feels like 2,882 people that were in attendance were all paying attention to everything that happened on the pitch. And I mean, even dogs and little children were attracted to everything. It was, it's a different atmosphere, and it was also interesting to be from the other perspective, because the last time I was up here with the Myrtle Beach friendly, I was with the South Slope Blues, stealing secrets maybe. but it was really cool to see them in their environment from the other perspective, and like playing off them in a way. And it's great to just have a really good friendly environment as well, in a rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. When I come up to Asheville, I always text my lady back home that I want to move here. And Charlotte Independence is my absolute number one team, but it's just it feels like it's literally a community playing soccer. Like, it's a club that's playing for their community, and it's really cool to see. And it's a great atmosphere. I mean, as far as the number of fans, it's roughly about the same as Charlotte. But it does feel a bit differently as well, and despite the fact that really until very recently our stadium wasn't much bigger as far as capacity goes, it's a little bit bigger, but
not a good point,
a whole lot bigger.
Yeah.
But it just feels like Ben said, like everyone's in this game, everyone's watching, mm-hmm. everyone's groaning when they miss something, cheering when they make a great goal. I mean, the other game I've ever been to was y'all's first ever game, and that was a 2-1 victory. And if I'm not mistaken, the game-winning goal was like at the last couple minutes, or it was pretty late on. Mm-hmm. And I remember how crazy everyone cheered. I remember Ryan Kelly one time talking about he was like way over yonder getting some water or something, and he just heard the stadium erupt, even though, I mean, it's not like it was like 80,000 people, it was like 2,000 people, but everyone's just so into the game. It's just cool. Like, whenever I parked a little bit away from the stadium and met you, we walked on our way down to the stadium, and it was about a 5-7 minute walk, but you saw people in Asheville shirts all over the place, some Greenville shirts too. That weren't necessarily going to the match, because we went hours beforehand, but just hanging around the town. It's like an event in the community. Yeah. And so, as far as you said, like comparing that to a step up, the experiences we have mostly are with Charlotte and a bit with Charleston when we went down there. And it feels like you have to go to the game Whereas here, it's like the game's happening in the area, and I think that really kind of plays into the whole what they say about you need a downtown stadium. I kind of get it with Asheville. Like, it does seem to be really important, not just because, oh, it's easy, I can just walk to it. No, but because it's part of the community. I feel like I'm rambling a bit, but
no, I think that's all good. I also, I would, this may not be a good correlation, but I feel like it's an event that can't be missed in the city.
Yeah.
So it's like a concert or somebody speaking in town or whatever it is. Like, you, everyone wants to witness this because it's something special, I think. I mean, I want to come up here every time when I can.
Yeah.
Because it's something different than you're going to find, I think, anywhere.
Is that how Greenville games are? I know Furman set out a little bit, but are you getting the same kind of response from the community and from the fans that are there? Are there casual fans that are going? Like, when we go there on July 4th, what can we expect?
That's a good question. It's different than Asheville in the sense that I feel like there's more, not that maybe there aren't families at Asheville, but I think there's more family-oriented in a way, or not oriented, but there's more families at Greenville. There's not, there's more like curious spectators in a way. Whether there is a comparison to Asheville where there's more like diehard soccer fans that this is their team. I think there's more like, what is this Greenville FC? I'm curious on this. I would, that's how I would describe it. But I also feel that there is an eruption in the stands when things happen. I think there's still an attentiveness there. But it is definitely a different situation because it is outside the city. I mean, Furman's probably 20 minutes away from like the downtown area. And also Greenville's just really spread out as well.
Yeah, you never know whether you're in, you literally can drive on one road straight and you can go through three different towns and then go back into those towns. Like, you'll be in Greer, Travelers Rest, Greenville, somehow Greer again, and you're going that one direction. Makes no sense.
If you hit Clemson, turn around.
Right. Yes. But it's, I've only been to one game, went to their first ever game. I love going to inaugural games. But it was a lot of fun, about 2,000 people there, so roughly about the same what y'all do, time to time. And, It was a lot of fun. It was a bit different because I was, I'd say I was a little more of a neutral than, say, Ben was at this game, obviously. But it was definitely a lot of fun. I can definitely see what he's saying about the whole families and everything. A lot more people curious. It felt like, for instance, it feels like that whole side of y'all stadium is swallowed by South Slope Blues, whereas there's definitely like a pocket of the Milltown operatives, but the enthusiasm is still throughout the whole crowd, just like it is with Asheville.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone has to be a South Slope Blue or a Milltown operative to get really into the game. But I think y'all have a lot of fun down in Greenville. I mean, just like I'm sure the Greenville people had fun up here. I mean, there's, how many people you say was over in your section? Look, roughly, I'm bad at guessing, 40 people, 30 people? I don't know.
Maybe like 40-ish people. But there's also, the thing I noticed too when I went to get hydration at halftime, which was a terrible idea. right. But luckily... pro tip, go to the funnel stand if they got it because they have water. It was a short line for some reason. But
who doesn't love funnel cake?
Fried Oreos. If you guys haven't had fried Oreos over there, those are great.
And they like sprinkled on it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen that before, but it looked great. I should have got it. Water distracted me. But it was interesting because there was a lot of sprinkling of Greenville fans throughout that side. Mm-hmm. So maybe like 40 or 50 people total, I would say. But it was a good contingency. It was a fun atmosphere. It was we're still learning a lot too as a supporters group, but it's a lot of fun. We're a really close knit group, I would say. That, as you can tell by my voice, we just like to yell a lot.
We could hear y'all at some points. Like the first half, not so much, but the second half, even before the goal, I remember one thing like, oh, I can hear them and I can understand what they're chanting right now.
Good.
Okay. So that's pretty good.
That's important that you understood what we were chanting.
although I don't mean to be mean, but I do think y'all need to step up that TIFO just a wee bit.
Yeah, we do need to.
It looked like y'all were supporting Asheville, but with different colors from where we were at.
You're being the bigger man.
Yeah, okay.
Chris. Okay, buddy. No, I'll agree with that. We're definitely learning still.
So, Pat, we have three games left. We play New Orleans twice and Greenville in Greenville. We were sitting third in the table. After tonight, I don't know if Atlanta or Georgia or Nashville goes back above us. Do you still think that a home playoff game should be our goal? Do you think, I don't think we're in any danger of not making the playoffs, but should we just play all out? Do you feel like our own fate is in our own hands playing New Orleans now?
I think the first thing that we needed to address before we even think about the playoffs is who's going to score goals if we make it to the playoffs. I mean, I would love to. I still see us making the playoffs. I think we can grind out some victories, but you know, if Cameron Saul doesn't come back, and even if he does, and if any of if like New Orleans or I mean Greenville next time if he's able to come back, they're going to focus on him. I mean, if they are watching our games, they know that he is our creative force, and almost I'm not going to say our everything, but besides, we created two really good chances tonight. I felt like they should have been put away. We don't have a finisher, so I feel like we still have a great chance to make the playoffs. I expect us to make the playoffs. But we need to find someone to score goals or else we're going to be done pretty quickly as well.
Ben, Chris, have you been following the women's season at all?
So do they get promoted to the NWSL at the end of the season or is it like a couple years?
So guys, we won 6-0 this past Thursday over... Who on earth did we play?
Lake Norman.
Lake Norman.
Was that the game that you found out too late that you could have went to?
No, that was the Carolina
Rapids.
I guess so, because Lake Norman's close to us too.
Yeah.
So the Lake Norman team did field a primarily high school team. I do believe they won the state championship or something along those lines this past season.
To the WPSL.
They just didn't have summer jobs. Guys, we still haven't lost a game this season. We have one draw. Guys, don't forget, only one team out of the Carolina Conference makes the playoffs, but we're sitting very pretty. We do have a game on Wednesday against Oak City, and then we play the Charlotte Eagles on Saturday at Pride Night. Please try to make it out for Pride Night on the 30th.
I saw a really cool Asheville City emblem was
rainbow. Oh yeah.
Our hats are dope. Yeah, they're really cool.
Yeah, and those hats will be for sale, guys. Ben, do you know if Greenville has any sort of aspirations for eventually fielding a women's team?
I don't.
Is that something you think the community would get behind?
I think so. I mean, Greenville's an interesting place because it is very spread out, like I said, but it's also a city that gets behind certain things. I think it's very, but it also wants like a high class type of a thing. It's not going to support this run-of-the-mill, doesn't want to put money towards this type of thing. That didn't make any sense. self-reflection as I say something. I think it'd be really cool to see it because then you get another rivalry with Asheville. I also feel like there's so many different high schools and different organizations that it would probably be very similar to Asheville in the sense of having a good talent pool. So WPSL to GVL.
And then you could also have the potential of the USL 3 team, the Greenville Pro Soccer. Maybe that's something they might want to do in the future as well. Or maybe it's something that, I mean, this might be wishful thinking, but maybe something the two ownership groups could work on together and maybe build a really good women's team. Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, I guess it's just a matter of the community's got to get behind this team first and see how that goes. And then I'm amazed that you guys did it in your second year. And not only that, but the success that you've had, not just on the field, but off the field. I mean, y'all set several records for attendance.
Didn't you break the record and then break it again?
And then somebody broke the second one. But on Pride Night, and especially, so apparently it rotates between the four different divisions of Louisiana, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas of who hosts the playoffs. And because the WPSL just doesn't update their website or provide that sort of information for people who are seeking it out for podcasts, not quite sure where the playoffs will be. The semifinals and the finals of all of the WPSL will be in Norman, Oklahoma this year, which unfortunately is a 14-hour drive, but I will split gas in an Airbnb with whoever wants to go on July 20th through the 22nd. Pat, any comments about the women's team, how we're doing?
Oh, well, 6-0 just kind of speaks for itself. When you look at the goal difference between us and the second team in the Carolina Conference, I mean, our goal difference is pretty vast. I mean, we just need our women to finish out the year the way they've been playing, and we're all really looking forward to the playoffs. I mean, it would be a shocker if we didn't make it there at this point. No jinxing. And if we don't make it there, we'll still support you guys and love you guys.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, hard knock on wood.
I hope this is real.
But they're looking fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, we hope Greenville gets a women's team. It'd be great more to talk about. It'd be a great rivalry. Just stay away from our players and our coach. No poaching.
Yeah, so on the last podcast, Chris and I kind of talked about the difference in the ability to recruit to Asheville in terms of WPSL and the ability to recruit to Asheville in the NPSL. Ben and Chris, do you guys know how Charlotte Independence recruits to the Charlotte Independence?
Well, I know they have a pretty good partnership with the Charlotte Eagles, the PDL club. We've seen that every year have some guys who are on the Charlotte Eagles the previous year. Like this year we have, how many players we got then?
From the Eagles?
Yeah.
I think just the one, Machaya Moape.
There's just Moape this year. Yeah. I know last year we had Siaj and all that, and it seems like we do that. And I know we've also brought in guys from local colleges. Like, you know, in the past we've had guys from UNC Charlotte, from Wingate, things like that. Our starting left back.
Donnie Smith.
Flash, yeah.
Yeah.
Donnie Smith, I can't think of his name right now.
Yeah.
He went to UNC Charlotte at one point, and he played for, you know, New England Revolution. But that's a good bit of it. But to be honest with you, some of it, I'm not sure, because this year in particular.
Comes out of nowhere.
We've brought in some seriously good class of players. Yeah. And I did like this little internship with a newspaper that I don't even want to admit, it wasn't very good. But the cool part about it was I kind of got some little inside talks with some guys, and we got a new owner. Our old owner, Jimmy Filmy, he still has a stake in the team, and he still is the managing guy. But we got more money in, and I thought maybe that's why we're bringing in guys, because we have guys with Champions League experience. We have a guy who scored 2 goals in the World Cup, and he was a defender. Yeah. I mean, we've got some quality guys, but according to the Independence, when I talked to them at the beginning of the year, that has nothing to do with the talent we brought in. So if that's the case, I wonder what we're going to bring in next year.
Yeah.
But our GM, Tom Minstrom, I think he's one of the best in the league. Honestly, for the budget we have is nowhere near as vast as some of the other teams' budgets, but he finds ways to bring in great guys. Everything I heard about him when he was the GM of the Eagles before that was great stuff. I really don't know what to do other than to give him credit. It seems like he does really good ways of finding not only good players, but quality off the field as well, to where, you know, they seem to all have really good chemistry. I can only think of one, I don't know what to call it other than the Terrell Owens situation that we've ever had, where we had one player that wasn't very good in the locker room, and that was our first season, and he lost his starting job midway through the year. So that seems to be the best way I can explain it.
Pat, how do you think we can continue to grow the Asheville brand in terms of recruitment? What do you think the next step for Asheville is?
Selling out the stadium every single week for a men's game. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When you look at the crowd that our women's team draws and compared to the men's, I mean, our men's team, we do get a good turnout. But I've seen, I mean, Ben said it, we've twice broken our own record for women's attendance. So I think the big key, I mean, talking to the players, a big reason why a lot of them love playing with Asheville is the stands. They love the South Blues. We have a great supporter section. When it comes to recruitment, I mean, man, I'd love some guys with some Champions League experience playing in Asheville.
I don't have to up y'all's amateur status at that point.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the things that we've talked about a lot here on the podcast is the local talent we have in Asheville. And I'd love to see more of like the top Asheville talent, you know, like maybe even freshmen or sophomores, really start getting a hard look at, so that way they can start developing. And, you know, maybe we can see a thoroughbred Asheville guy play for us 5-6 years, starting maybe their sophomore or junior year if they're talented enough. So I say look from within would be probably our best way, because, you know, we do have talent. I mean, heck, it was 10 years ago or so, T.C. Robertson had an undefeated team, number one team in the country. I mean, half those guys went D1. So I would say looking locally would probably be our best source of recruiting talent at this point. I mean, we're no Charlotte Independence. I mean, there's players you guys just rattled off, those sound fantastic.
Yeah, and we got a lot of quality guys. Even like, honestly, probably our most legendary player has been in the USL for forever, Jorge Herrera. He has the second most goals in the USL history.
Yeah, he's I think he's close to first, but he's second.
And not only that, we've also had other guys, like for instance, Enzo Martinez. He isn't with us anymore, but he was drafted into the MLS, didn't quite make it, came down with us and played with us for our first three seasons, was runner-up or in the running for USL MVP his last two seasons. And because of our special relationship with Colorado Rapids, he got tryouts with them. And then now Colorado's not having a good year from what I understand. I'm not an MLS guy. But everything I've heard, he's one of the bright spots on their team. And that's impressive when he was just playing in our division last year. And he isn't one of the guys who has like Champions League or World Cup experience, but he was a big leader for us. And I mean, it's just really cool seeing, you know, the different levels of soccer where y'all are at and where we're at, just seeing how guys, you know, who either had that experience now coming down to our level or guys who are trying to use that, our team to springboard onto something bigger.
Yeah. One of the things we've talked about is a little bit of that snake eating its own tail in terms of, you know, we have talent from the local high schools playing on the women's team, Carolina Day on the men's team. But one of the things I know that Asheville City is really attempting to do, and I've spoke to Ryan a little bit about it, and so I don't know if this was the intention from the beginning or if it was a happenstance that he kind of fell face forward into and it just made so much sense. But now with Tom Dealey coaching the Asheville Shield, Nafor coaching, Jennifer Cujo coaching, we're now creating not just Asheville City players in terms of recruitment, but they're coming here and they're embedding themselves in the local community, coaching the next generation of Asheville players who can only go on to continue to play for the local high schools, spread out from there, and hopefully come back during the course of the summer. Mm-hmm. So again, that kind of snake eating its own tail of catch them when they're young, coach them up, send them out into the world, and just watch what happens when they come back. Ben, Chris, I really want to thank you guys for coming up for the game. A little bit sorry that it couldn't have ended a little bit better for Asheville. Ben, congratulations, but we'll see you on July 4th. Pat, you want to let them know what they are?
As always, guys, you're smarter than us.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network. Thank you to Audionautics for our music, and find us on social media at your_smarter on Twitter and at your_smarter_than_us@gmail.com.